Commission of the Port of Port Townsend, in order, please stand and pledge allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Any updates or amendments to the agenda?
Nope. I move approve the agenda as is.
I second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Public comments. Please restrict your comments to 3 minutes. Yes, sir.
Well, I hope I can do 3 minutes.
Oh, go ahead.
Jim asked me to speak to Steve, but I haven't seen Steve because he doesn't hang out in our college. So, and Abigail said I could speak, so I will speak.
And I know you're Gordon, but can you say your name?
I'm Gordon, and I'm retired. Gordon Nielsen, I'm a retired business owner here, and blah, blah, blah. You guys know it all. And I might be just a day or two behind you guys, schedule-wise, so this may have already been solved. But my hope is to just lay a foundation for something in the future. Maybe these words will help out. Okay, now you can start my 3 minutes.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. I've heard that there's complaints about natives not paying for the ramp. And I just want you to know that it's not just natives. Because if you live here, you know how many little skiffs get launched and nobody stops at the box. It just doesn't happen. But I want to talk about the natives. All of the land that this town sits on is Indian land, and it was ceded by treaty to the federal government. And ceded means that it wasn't given away freely. It was in return for some things the federal government would do. One of those things was guaranteeing access to UNA, usual and accustomed areas for fishing, gathering, and hunting. This has been established in the U.S. Supreme Court all the way back to 1903. So you can look at the case law. I'm sure your lawyer is well aware of it. He didn't look at me, so. At any rate, they were guaranteed access to their usual and accustomed areas. Those yellow gates you see up in the forest, you know, when you drive, tribes have keys to those because that's their UNA. So I know that you're looking at, well, and I've heard, maybe we should boot the tribal trucks that show up and launch their boats because they don't pay. Well, that's going to be kind of touchy because it's a treaty right. And treaty rights are guaranteed by the federal government, so that's going to trigger the feds to take the treaty position. You got to have deep pockets to go against the feds. What I'm suggesting is just let it be free. Free to everybody. And why do I say that? Well, Steve, you and I had a conversation out here. You were amazed. $10,000 one tribe gave to help finish this. And you said, I'm going to put a plaque up there. I know commissioners have busy schedules, so that plaque never got up there. But I know that you had good intent that day. You said, I'm going home and I'm going to draw it up right away. I think that's still a great idea because it will show people that tribes are not being negligent about the cost of things here in the harbor. And you can go ask other tribes. Why? Because 1/3 of the tribes in Washington State are on this peninsula. 1/3 of them. I know you're... Some of the looks are, I didn't know that. Yeah, but 1/3 of them live here. So I'm just asking you to drop the charge for that.
Sorry, didn't mean that happened.
And you ought to know that the free ramp down at the other end of town, is starting to see sporties show up, as well as tribal members, as well as skulls going out from that ramp. So if there's a free one at one end of town, and a charge for one at this end of town, how long is it going to be before guys want to launch their boats down there? Because they're going to save fuel. It's the it's a simple math problem. So my encouragement to you, and I hope these words carry up, is just don't charge for anything. Go back to the tribes and tell them, hey, we've got needs. Your fishermen come and pay guest moorage to leave their fish boats here overnight during openings. And we have work we need to do on the docks. Can you help us out? And there's many tribes to go to, not one, many. So, and put up recognition of it so that the non-tribal members get it. That tribal members have paid long time ago in treaties, millions of acres. So just these few words, wanting to give you guys kind of a perspective that you might not have otherwise, to don't turn it into what we call on the res an Indian war, which nobody really wins, it just gets messy. And just let it be free to everybody and let the fishing continue. Just these few words, thank you very much.
Thank you, Barbara. I would like to respond a little bit if I could. I have some commissioner comments I was going to make, but one thing in the last several weeks, I've been really involved in talking with Indian tribes. And Jim and I had a meeting with Ron Allen with this Jamestown Tsleil, and we went to this intergovernmental thing with the three tribes. And one of these things, I bought a book that was just written out by, it's a fascinating book. It talks about the treaties and the relationships with the treaties of all the different tribes with us. And I find it just a fascinating topic, and I really want to, Jim and I are going to make an arrangement to talk with the tribes. Right now we're starting to make a big push so we can get together on this, because I share exactly the same thing as you do. I feel that the relationships between the non-tribal and the tribal have been improving. And what hurt me so badly was with the problems we had on the boat ramp, was I could see the tinges of animosity starting to form against between the non-tribes and the tribes. I wanted to stop that. I didn't know how, and I think now I have a better idea of how. Let's go to the tribes and talk it out, and we'll come to a solution from there. Don't know what the solution is going to be yet, but I know that I'm really anxious and interested in getting tribes involved, talks with all the tribes around here.
Put that bronze plaque up. Put it up there so it big.
Yeah, I actually gave that to a, I can't remember which executive director it is, and it didn't get done, so.
Okay, so. There you go, Jim. I'll get it done. I fulfilled my dad. Abigail, thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you.
Kit Kittredge from Quilcene, and I'm here to request once again that no port properties in Quilcene be sold, and that the exorbitant amount of, I shouldn't say exorbitant, the plentiful amount of taxes that come from District 3 into the port coffers and along with the rental from Coast, that they be used to just, we're asking that our marina, beach, public areas that are used there be maintained, please. Thank you very much. And then I also have a letter here. Dear Commissioners, this is from Ann Ricker. Director Kovarnik has ordered an appraisal of property being considered for sale to Asia Pacific Seafoods Coast by the Port of Port Townsend. This indicates a willingness to explore such a sale. Both Mr. Hankey and Mr. Putney have said that they are looking at it. The only large annual revenue source, $60,000, for the Quilcene property is the lease with Coast. Other revenues come from moorage, camping, shower use, fuel sales, but these do not generate enough to even cover the depreciation, which is between $60,000 and $80,000 annually, which is problematic itself. We consider the depreciation issue on the budget that we looked at over the last 10 years to be highly significant, as it wasn't placed elsewhere in the budget. So that's very concerning to us. If the port were to sell Coast the property under consideration, it would be $1 million or so. This is merely a short-term solution to a long-term commitment. The needed dredging would be paid for short-term, but any long-term maintenance and use coverage is lost. The port ought to renegotiate the lease with Coast, perhaps $100,000 a year, to reflect what Coast takes from Quilcene Bay in profits, upwards of $10 million a year. This would cover all maintenance over many years. Coast subsidiary Penn Cove is responsible for most of the degradation of the property, except for the water that is being contaminated on shores. So Coast should be responsible for its repair. The people of Quilcene also wonder how Coast managed to acquire the waterfront property they occupy now. This severely restricts water access for the public. Why have they been allowed to fail the discharge reporting required in their original lease for years? Why are they not paying their fair share? Why would the port allow this? Please do not force us to engage attorneys to confront a decision to sell public property to a private corporation for no reason other than it is convenient for the port to do so. This is contrary to your contract with the people of Jefferson County and your responsibilities to the community of Quilcene and Washington State rules for the functioning of its port authorities. Ann Ricker, thank you.
And I'm sorry, Sue is on compassionate leave, and we have a recording, and Sue is going to have to make sense of this afterwards, so if everyone could intone their name and resident, city of residence, that would help her a lot. Thank you.
I'll make this copy too as well. Thank you.
Okay, Jennifer Takaki, Marina Cafe, and Betty G out here. I was going to speak on the bathrooms, which I'm still speaking on, but I've learned since then, I'm very excited the port is not putting up any signage or any more announcements about directing people as to where to use the showers. I think it's not our responsibility to send it, which may sound harsh, but I think it's not our responsibility, and I was really concerned about them sending people to Mountain View Pool because those people that work up there, their responsibilities is to make sure our children don't drown, not monitoring the pools. And I've since learned that we're not doing that, so I think that is great. I think that was risky for the port. And we, if something, how I could, as a mother whose son is in swim club and is up there, I just was worried that if something happened to any parent up there is gonna obviously come after the pool and the port for saying, you're too risky down here, you should just go there, because there's children everywhere. So I'm glad that's not happening. But what I wanted to say is there's a lot of other, and all the other YMCAs that I contacted on the peninsula, a lot of them have partnerships with different, most of them are churches and we're not a church, but it's still a really good partnership that maybe the port wanted to consider with working with them. Like they had times, certain shower times that were available either at the church or at the Y, that were specific and organized and monitored. And maybe we could come together and work with the city and the Y as to how to make the showers accessible for other people. I have to admit that I understand why the showers are locked down here. That's the one of the main reasons we stopped doing pizza night on the Betty G, is because I didn't want to deal with the showers late at night with my 9-year-old. It was kind of stressful, and I just didn't want to deal with it. So I understand why the showers got locked, but maybe we can be the side of the coin that fixes, that helps fix the problem if possibly the city is, doesn't want to do it or feels like it's not their responsibility. Maybe we could be the better ones and come up with a solution with the showers. Thank you.
Good idea.
Going around. Yes.
Hi. My name is Jack Gray, Chimicone. I have an MLE motorboat out of ADOT. I've been a tenant here for about 28 plus years with lots of adventures and very few meetings, but I haven't spoken at a meeting, so I wrote a few points that I was going to try to cover. But first, I'd like to say that I'm really happy to have heard the comments from a previous speaker about tribal relationships. And I know that the chairs of Jamestown Squam, L'Oreal Squam, and maybe another one have started meetings, and I'm really pleased to hear that more is going to happen in that direction, because I think we've gone far too long in some not very good adherence to most treaties that we're responsible to participate with. So anyhow, that said, there's an item on the agenda that when I saw it, I was puzzled in kind of a negative way. And I'd just like to give you my take on it. It's, let's see, item number 7E, resolution number 698-19, authorizing a multi-year levy period. And what troubles me is that knowing that we've had such a hard time establishing trust and accountability and transparency with the community, you know, with the county actually, and others, but that we now have this on the agenda, and I had to really discover, or try to discover what it's all about, because it seems so overwhelming when I started to look at the scope of it. Then I was reading the authorization for us, the port, to actually take this action. And one of the parts of the authorization is, of course, notice, and I couldn't find notice. Of course, I only subscribed to the Reader, and I was looking back, and I think I went 3 or 4 editions and didn't see it. And then someone told me that they saw it in the Financial Daily. I have seen other notices in the Reader, so my questions are, why did we give notice to PDN instead of the local Leader, or instead of both, when we're looking for transparency? And why are we not identifying the purpose of the immediate need, Port Hudson Jetty, to voters for some support, or at least so we can start to build some support and show them that we can be accountable? And 3, how will voters interpret the findings of additional taxation when they discover this and they haven't really been part of it, part of discussing it? I mean, not all of us can make the workshops and the public hearings around it. And why at this late stage, when I think, you know, we've known, I haven't known, but I know many of you at the port would have known, that this was an option for a long time. So why are we having it as an agenda item for approval instead of reading, or why haven't we done it earlier, or why can't we do it later? That puzzles me. And lastly, this is just an opinion, I think, you know, with our goal being to develop trust and transparency with the taxpayers, the residents, the tenants. This is not a really good example. I think we have established, I have seen more established relationships in a good way, particularly with the marine trades. I think there's a lot more to happen with the rest of the community, including the Moorage, and especially the Moorage community. So that's my piece, and I hope we get there.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you, Jack.
Yes, sir.
I think that he's talking about Resolution 1819.
Yeah, could you?
Carl Berger.
Got it. Okay, great.
Can you guys see this? Oh, let me bring it a little closer. Pass that around, please. That's your legal notice. And I always do my comments with questions.
But where did you get that one? Out of the Leader or the PDN?
That was in the PDN. I didn't see it in the Leader. I looked in both places. I'm not sure what's going on. I'm a newcomer here. But why some things have to have a second reading, first reading, second reading. This one's regular business. My only question is, and I don't expect an answer because I've asked these questions before, why is it hurry? That's it.
Okay. Someone else? Yes, ma'am.
I'll get around to item E, but first I would like to thank, this is Gwendolyn Tracy, by the way. Hi, Sue. I'm delighted to see item C, 7C, and I hope that it all goes through and Scott and the family are able to expand their business and grow their labor base and bring in more fish. On item E, I'm, like everyone else I've heard here, a bit chagrined about the process through which it's come to our attention. I do realize that it has been a topic of conversation for years around the financial condition of the port as a solution to a problem that has been waved over our heads and put a pretty big flag in the last few years. There's concern that it's another ding on the public, you know, pocket. These are public assets. This is a fixed amount, as I understand it. This is $15 million, that's it, and it's over. There's a huge amount of legwork that needs to be done in the planning process for the port for a variety of reasons. I believe the comprehensive plan needs to be updated. The strategic plan could use some refinement. It's been a few years since that was addressed. Capital repair replacement plan is, I believe, 5 years old or so now. And at the retreat, it was mentioned that these things would be addressed in the third quarter of 2019, in part as a prelude to the process of finding a new director and being able to lay out a slate, a current slate of projects and costs. I hope that this administration and this commission rides that pony right into the third quarter and gets it done. And I think it would be a great opportunity for that Citizens Advisory Board to be reactivated and contribute to that. And I would like to commend this administration and commission for getting the stormwater to meet benchmarks, for getting the pieces and the players together to come up with a solution for the South Jetty at Point Hudson that actually confirms to public sentiment, visually, aesthetically, and is a more affordable option. But, you know, selling the building to Scott and allowing him to build his business out, selling all the buildings in the port is not going to be enough to fix the infrastructure backlog that exists. And if the public has to weigh in on this, I value what the port brings to the county, the accessibility, the opportunity. And I would like to see the port be able to continue to do that. And if they cannot receive their funds through the public, who's they're responsible to, then we know the bonding capacity isn't there to fulfill the need. The port may have to look to the private sector and sell assets to cover the cost of the assets they keep. And that brings me even more chagrin, because as we've seen in Clallam County, and if you've looked a little farther afield, there's a huge investment opportunity in small marinas right now. There are a variety of entities shopping for small marinas, and the port has three of them. So I'd like to keep them public. Thank you.
Next. Going once, going twice, three times. Thank you.
Just Robert Frank, Admiral Ship Supply. It's a question. I know you guys don't answer questions, but it's my understanding that when you've done business as the Industrial Development District in the past, those were special call meetings. It appears that the agenda of the resolution is under the court's meeting today. And I'm just wondering if that's accurate as it's presented. Thanks.
Point of clarification. I believe you might be thinking about the IDC, which is different than the IDD.
Okay.
Yeah, IDC is a different, it's like a subsidiary of the port.
Yeah. Thank you.
Also, a point of clarification, we call that meeting on the first meeting of the year.
Yeah.
With the IDC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Consent agenda. So we had a chance to look at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I make a motion that we approve.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, good. We have no second readings. We have no first readings. We have... the Marine Science Center briefing.
Hi.
No need to be brief.
For the record, I'm Janine Boire, the Executive Director of the Marine Science Center. And I'm here in part at the invitation of Steve and Jim, who noted most recently when we were doing a citizen science project, we were pulling the invasive wheatgrass out of the beach near our building. I was reminded that the land south of the pier belongs to the port. So if you go like maybe 15, 20 feet south of the Fort Worden Pier, it becomes port land. So who knew? We all learn something every day. But it was noted that we were pulling grass on port land, and maybe they would like to hear about it before we do that. So here we are, shameless self-promotion. We are doing, for Earth Day, we're doing a beach cleanup and a citizen science bio blitz, where we will not be removing anything, but we will taking out our smartphones with our geolocators and taking a picture of every piece of biota on Fort Worden. And so we've got some of the high school classes out there. So I just wanted to pass this around, and anybody interested in joining us, you're most welcome. And there's more information on our website. So, and it would be helpful to have clarification on what kinds of things you want to hear about. And I can understand if we're taking out invasive grasses, but if there is...
Yeah, what prompted my initial question was, all the time growing up, I always figured that people were told to plant grasses on beaches that were eroding to keep it so from eroding, and seeing that we were removing grasses that were planted specifically to control erosion, even though they have subsequently become invasive, I thought, wow, we should know about that. So we have a problem, we need to rectify it. So in other words, just keeping us educated about what, because, you know, yeah. You know, never bother.
Well, and the longer story of that is that our natural systems have evolved over billions of years. And natural systems are a complex weave of many different species. And when invasive grasses or invasive whatevers come in, they tend to go into a monoculture, which means that there's only one thing. And if there's something else that is just one thing, can take those out very easily. Where if it's a mixed, it's the natural mix of biota that has evolved over a period of time, it's much more resilient. So for example, if there was a pathogen that came in to take out the invasive species, then everything would be gone. Where when you have a natural mix of grasses that have evolved over a period of time, then it's much more resilient writ large. So,
thank you.
Okay. Yeah. So,
thank you for maintaining the beach.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, we're going to have a barbecue on our beach. Give us a call and invite us.
Okay.
I'm just going to have clean it while
our beach. Oh, right.
And we have some posters to hang up too.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
So, thank you
very much.
Fish and wildlife meets.
Point of order, do we know who this gentleman is here?
Oh, that guy?
It's our attorney.
It's our attorney. That's Bernie.
There's no name on it, so it's kind of like this.
Say hello, Frank.
Hi.
He can't see you. He sees these guys.
Yeah.
Okay. Hello. Just to introduce, you know, since we don't, we all get to introduce, but we don't, you know, always know who that is.
That's Frank from Bellingham.
Frank from Bellingham. Okay. Does he have a last name?
Real
Schmellick.
But nobody can spell it.
Oh.
Schmellick. Just like it sounds.
S-C-H-M-E-L-C-K.
C-H. Okay.
Well, commissioners, you know this has been over a year in the making. It's probably one of the most complicated leases we've ever put together. The state uses what's called the state enterprise services to do their leases, which is their real estate arm. They have very specific rules and regulations on how they do something. As you know, Fish and Wildlife has been in the building at Point Hudson for 5 years now, which is their sixth year. and there has been some issues with the creosote smell and their employees. So as the creosote smell has seemed to get worse, their real estate company really wanted to make sure that there was a fix for that, or at least a fix in the capital plan for that. We've gone through with engineers, we've gone through with environmental scientists trying to figure out a fix. I think we're close. So what this lease tends to do is take the Fish and Wildlife to another 5-year lease on top of this, of what they've been so far. It puts the port on the hook for spending $120,000, up to $120,000, to abate the creosote smell. And we think we're on to something with a ventilation system, a new HVA system, HVAC system, and removing the carpet, which we believe is absorbing some of the smells. For that, the Fish and Wildlife will sign another 5-year lease. They will agree to an 8.9% increase in their rate. And I think it's a good marriage. It's a compromise that we didn't really want to spend $120,000, but we think it's needed at this point. And it's going to be a good case study for us, if successful, on how to abate the creosote smell in the other buildings.
So who's going to be doing that?
We don't have to go to bid.
We haven't done that. We have some estimates, though, from somebody that does that, like Airflow. Is that who did it?
Airflow came and did the estimates for us in the schematics.
Okay.
So what this is asking for is the rent. We go from the new rent would be $8,430 per month, so that would be about a little over $100,000 a year. And we would ask for your approval. Now, I noted in the write-up that the state does not pay a 3%. So I did the numbers for you in the write-up that shows the increase of the 3% escalation over 5 years versus an 8.9% increase immediately. And as you can see, it's about a $28,000 increase in what we would get if we did a CPI increase.
So did we give them something else to get that 8.9% increase? In other words, the parking and the other areas are all the same, the footprint, and this does not include the area inside the sale lot.
In lieu of the CPI escalation, they won't do a CPI escalation,
right. So he said. But this is more than a CPI installation. So I was wondering if we ended up giving them something else to be able to get that.
It still has their 15 parking spaces and everything else, just like they have for the last 6 years.
In the past.
Yeah.
And we get guarantees that we're not required to do the sidewalks and the lighting.
Yeah.
All of the, remember when
Greg... Yeah, I noticed it still says that we need to have lighting, though. If you're looking here, it says lighting, verify that at least the minimum illumination is maintained for all parking areas and pedestrian pathways throughout the site.
But by moving their parking to the Cupola House site, there is lighting between there and the building.
Right.
It was the lighting that they wanted from the back 40 all the way that they were talking about.
Right. So in other words, then, the way this lease is written, the way I understand it, is that if the parking does go back there, then we have to supply lighting back there.
That is true.
So what we can do is move the parking out and then not have to supply that.
Okay.
I'd make a motion that we move forward with this.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Kimmel's Crab Shack. Hey, Al.
Eric.
That was even on me.
Okay.
That's fine. I'll do it. So, as the commission may remember, the buildings that are on the New Day's Fit were surplus some years ago. Actually, in two administrations ago, under the executive directorship of Larry Crockett. So these buildings have been surplus for a period of approximately 3 years now. At the time, what came forward subsequent to surplusing to the commission was a proposed lease for a 50-year term of the land itself, There were concerns expressed by the commission about the term of that lease. We went back and talked with Mr. Kimmel about a reduced term. During that period of discussions with Mr. Kimmel, before the matter was brought back to the commission for review and ratification, there was a change in port administration again. And the new administration took the view that that this was the wrong path, that that the property, the buildings should not be sold, and that it was a port responsibility to find the means by which to undertake the renovations, in particular to the main New Day building, which is in dire need of improvements, in particular a roof. Obviously, because of the port's constrained financial position, we do not have the wherewithal to do that. And obviously, when you do pretty straightforward back of the envelope math here, there's no way for us to recoup under any really conceivable scenario the capital investments that would be necessary by way of a lease return. So what we've done, based on the commission's discussions at the January workshop, where there was a general sense of the commission expressed that desire to do a review of the port's lease portfolio and identify opportunities potentially for surplusing and sale of assets, this obviously was a property, the buildings again only, that was kind of front and center in those considerations. We followed up with an update to the appraisal that was done by Peter Charette of Kidder Matthews in, I believe, 2015, with a revised and updated appraisal. I think his conclusion was that the property, and maybe you can elaborate on this, Jim, since you were in privy to the direct discussions with Mr. Charette, the appraisal was essentially $116,500, but that was assuming that quite a number of improvements would be undertaken by the port to the building. We've since concluded that a better course of action would be to settle on a lower sale price that would not obligate the port to undertake any improvements to the structures precedent to sale. So what is before you is essentially a modified version of the lease that came before you in 2016, with a much shorter lease term and a modified description of premises and lease rate. The premises, I believe, now have been more accurately described and include essentially all of the land on the New Day spit.
Except
the cell tower. And that area encompasses, I believe it's just under 29,000 square feet. And that obviously is reflected in the proposed lease rate, which is suggested, I believe, at 6 cents a foot. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. For a monthly lease rate of $2,072.00, along with the purchase of the buildings for $101,500 for the purchase, and that includes splitting the cost of the renewed and updated appraisal. So the term is 30 years, 6 cents a foot, and it resolves the issue, at least, of the port's currently unfunded obligation to make improvements to the premises. And it provides Mr. Kimmel and his business with the security over a 30-year period that they have been seeking to grow and sustain their business.
So I'm going through this. The escalator is a standard CPI?
Correct.
And
plus a market rate, periodic market rate assessment as well.
Okay. And is there any restriction on use?
The use is, use of the premises is restricted, and it is identified in paragraph 6 on page 23 of your packet for processing and retail of retail and wholesale sales of fish, and not for any other purpose without prior written consent. Okay.
Thank you.
Where'd you guys end up on the pier? The lease.
So, you know, the pier is one of those issues that Scott and his family, we should preface this, that the Kimballs have been on that spit for over 35 years. I mean, literally, they've built most of the infrastructure out there. The pier is wholly used by them. They've installed the crane at their expense. They've installed the ice machine at their expense. Not to say other ships can't tie up there, but only when unloading product into New Day. The fact of trying to get other fish buyers in there just was not going to work. So when you look at the lease rate Scott is paying right now, which is about $23,000 or $2,300 a month, they're going to be paying almost as much for land lease as they are for the buildings. And the reason that is we've included the pier and we're actually leasing in the pier. So
I guess, but since we own the pier, we also were responsible for maintenance of the pier, and the ice machine that's up there going to that pier all day long is going to really shorten its life, I think.
Good, Steve got right to the point.
I'm sorry. No.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
But at this point, that's all we've done is we've set it up as a lease arrangement with him.
So the fact that we're leasing in that. That pier doesn't relieve us of the responsibility for maintaining the pier.
That's good. It's not called out in here.
Yeah.
So what do we do about the pier? Because I remember hearing a while ago that the pier was a concern. But then after they looked at it more closely, it wasn't as big a, it didn't rise to as big a concern if they thought of it, but it still was a concern. So we're getting rid of one maintenance headache, which is the roof we can't afford to do, and trading it for another potentially more expensive, you know, headache. A long-term headache. And since we didn't even build the pier, Scott's family did, I mean, we have no control over that. I mean, it's probably done well, obviously, they all produce themselves. I'm just not sure. Well,
if you look at paragraph 10 of the lease, it spells out that throughout the term of the lease, the lessee and the lessee's sole cost and expense shall maintain the premises of all improvements, port-owned and lessee-owned. So that basically says right there, if he's leasing it, he's maintaining it.
Oh, okay. Got it. That's better.
So that means that Scott's going to be maintaining the pier?
That's what that says.
And what verse is that?
10.
Page
25.
Yeah, 10 what section?
A.
A?
A. First sentence.
Okay, yeah, the first part of that, keep all the premises and the adjoining roadways and walkways clean and in a sanitary condition. I mean, it is a fish place. So it's not supposed to look like a cardio shit, but I went back and I looked.
Particularly point three.
What I'm talking about is all, I've looked around all the stuff there. I actually went down to look at it to see where it was sitting on our line, and the back of the building is on the property line. So anything back that is a street, and I noticed that they fenced off the street and a bunch of junk stored in it. Mm. You know, like an old, some sort of piece of equipment, tubs and totes and stuff. And I'm not going to get anal about it, but keeping the premises and the adjoining roadways and walkways neat, clean, and in safe and sanitary condition, that's like right next to the water. It goes down to the beach and there's a bunch of junk there. So I'm not sure. Well, I guess we have an answer in that section 10 about here, which is
important. Well, we'll bring that up to Scott when he signs this, that this is what he's signing, because that's very clear that port-owned assets he's going to maintain. So.
Yeah.
In my conversations with Scott, the kennels have been maintaining the pier for quite a few years.
Yeah.
It's been their expense, and they've been more than willing to take care of it out there.
Thank you.
I'm good.
Yes.
I'll make a motion that we take on this, lease and sale.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. February 2019 financials.
So our year-to-date financial statements as of February, looking pretty solid with the revenues, comparative to prior year, even comparative to the budget. I think it's important to, when you're looking at the line items, to compare to budget as much as possible. Although, because we're moving towards the cash basis, there are some timing differences in some of these line items, which I've noted in the footnotes. But overall, it looks like we're doing well, and I'm especially excited about the revenues. And then the fact that we've been able to cut expenses has really helped too, although it's a little wonky when you compare to, compare to the prior year.
Are we still adjusting ourselves to the new financial regime as well?
Yeah.
So she will interpret those results for us, because then we all know which things used to be done now, but it'll come lump sum later when they have.
Right. I mean, one of those big ones is under facilities and operations. That's a number of line items that are consolidated, but that large chunk of 33 is pretty much all insurance. The general liability, you know, the mall insurance, the airport insurance, that hits our books around August and September. And that'll be in a lump sum instead of, you know, allocated evenly throughout the year, which is what was done in the past. The same is true with the property tax. That's another standard, used to be allocated evenly throughout the year, not the way we receive it. And so if you look at 18 compared to 19, you'll see that discrepancy is directly related to actual cash received versus what we allocated before.
So we're paying that twice a year, is that, or just once a year?
Yeah, it's twice a year, but people sometimes pay a little early, and so, yeah, it started coming in.
So, really gonna, I mean, it's not so much the fact that we're at the end of Q1 here, but, like, I'm just looking through expenses.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number of line items there that have some pretty big variances, and that really is attributed to our switch to cash.
Mm-hmm.
And so thinking forward to the end of Q2, we should start to see some things mellow out a little bit with that. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would think so. Although I know I was looking at contract services this afternoon, and to really figure that out, what those differences were. And then I went back another year and compared, and 17 was 47,000 as of, that the same time of year. So yeah, it's timing differences.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are, the big one, item E.
Are we talking about, are we talking about occupancy, or is that just for us to look at?
Do you want to talk about that, Jim?
We can talk about February RV numbers.
Yeah, that's a huge drop. Was that because everything's frozen?
It's because it was frozen again, and we couldn't get RVs in here. So again, it's seasonal. Overall, we're doing well. Anybody that's walked through the yard or looked at the yard knows that, you know, Terry's been here, 20, 30 years? And I've been here close to 20, and I have never seen the yard this way. I walked through the yard yesterday, and we've got boats in places we've never had boats. So from that point of view, it's great. Obviously, the marina's full. But RVs did take a hit in February, so we're hoping to recover. But overall, I think staff's doing a great job of working with the resources we have to get as many people as we can.
So that made me, I was asked a serious question. Did some of the pipes freeze in the RV?
Yeah, we had to turn the water off. Mm-hmm. But people just couldn't get here. So. Mm-hmm. So, review.
Cross-country ski?
Yeah.
Okay, item E, I have a preamble. Did you want to say something as well?
Sure. Do you want me to go first? Do we want Eric to do a preamble to it and then go from there?
That's fine. So, commissioners, just by way of a refresher, the port has had an industrial development district since 1966. The boundaries of that district have not been modified since an amendatory resolution was passed in December of 1966. Under the statute, which is RCW 5336, there was an initial six-year levy period that was undertaken between the years 1967 and 1972. The statute that we're talking about was originally adopted in 1955, amended in 1957 to allow multiple levy periods, and then amended again in 2015 by the legislature to permit the levy period to be extended, but not the amount that could be generated over that extended levy period. So I want to be really clear about what we are and are not talking about this evening. This is not a resolution that would impose any tax in and of itself. It is instead a resolution whereby the commission would authorize a second multi-year levy period of up to 20 years to complete projects within the boundaries of the previously established IDD. And just by way of reference, that includes it includes all of the properties and facilities currently owned by the Port of Port Townsend and operated by the Port, as well as some other areas in proximity to the shoreline and the Jefferson County International Airport in particular. So the resolution that's before you merely affirms the Commission's intent to move ahead with a second multi-year levy period, but it would not impose any taxes. Instead, the Commission and subsequent commissions on an annual basis would determine how much, if any, should be levied and collected in the ensuing year as part of the Port's annual budget process. As the Commission knows, the Port faces tens of millions of dollars in critical infrastructure rehabilitation projects that need to be undertaken if the Port's core lines of business and our community's working waterfront character are going to be preserved for future generations. And I want to say working waterfront, that's not just a catchphrase. It's almost become a cliche. We've used it so much over the years. But to put it in perspective, the Port's infrastructure is the foundation that supports 450 private sector jobs here at Boat Haven alone, about 1,100 direct jobs countywide, and about 2,200 total jobs in our community. That's direct, indirect, and induced jobs. So port infrastructure is really a key to all of that. And although much of our infrastructure was built either by or with the support of the federal and state governments, times have changed, particularly since the great financial crisis of 2008 and 9. And current circumstances demand that we shoulder a greater share of responsibility at the community level for funding capital rehabilitation of this vital infrastructure. Unfortunately, our existing revenues and operating income are entirely insufficient to fund the replacement and repair of these aging capital assets. As the Commission understands, the Port currently receives less than $1 million annually in taxes from county residents. The rest of the Port's revenues are coming entirely from our lines of business, rates, fees, and rents. And for this reason, at least from your staff's perspective, we believe that implementation of a second IDD levy period is a really critically important tool that this administration and commission and future commissions and administrations will need to provide the funding required to fix our capital assets, defend these important private sector jobs and incomes, and to preserve our community's working waterfront heritage and character. And for this reason, we strongly recommend its approval. Thank you.
Okay.
There you go.
So I guess I'd like to address a couple of questions that came up in public comments. One was, why now and not later? We have a deadline if we're going to do anything in the next year. We have to notify the county, is it April 1st?
Mm-hmm.
April 1st, mm-hmm. So we don't have another meeting between now and then, so that's why. This just opened, as Eric mentioned, this really just opens a window. We still have this to actually enact a levy. We're going to have to do that concurrent with budget. We would probably do that in the budget hearing.
Public hearing in November.
In November, so people will have an opportunity to chime in then. You know, I think it's important to understand that when the legislature established the Washington Public Ports, they established the public ports not as a general taxing, like a city or a county agency. The public ports are more an enterprise, and it's a very strange mix, even among ports, publicly owned ports. Washington Public Ports is a very strange animal. One of the somebody was speaking to another person in local government told me ports are required to fund themselves as business enterprises, but have to operate under the constraints of a government agency. So, you know, we make a majority of our income from leasing buildings and land and providing services, but we have to live under all of the governmental restrictions on everything we do. So, in a sense, we have the worst of both worlds to deal with. Again, we're bringing forward opening a 20-year window. The last window that was opened I think it was $250,000 was all that was used in that window. The cap has not changed between then and now. If we were to take every last dime of money that we could take, and when we announced this, we're fixing the value of land. So as land values go up, as things get built, all that sort of stuff, you know, we're capped where we are. If we took every last nickel we could take, it would amount to about $1.30 per week for the average property owner. And I did a little search on Google to see what I could buy for $1.30, you know, and it ain't much. I came up with this. You could buy a Lego for $1.30. And I'm not saying it's not, you know, it's not nothing for somebody that's tight in money. It's something. The city has passed some ordinances that would relieve, elder and low-income people from this sort of thing. So they won't get hung up with it anyway. A port the size and complexity of if you look at the other public ports around the Puget Sound, a port the size and the complexity of the Port of Port Townsend, those districts are getting about twice the tax distribution that this port gets. I think we've done very well with the tax money we've gotten. The PTMTA commissioned a study, and I think they came back with for every dollar we take out of the tax rolls, we bring back six, something like that. So I think the property tax owners are getting a reasonable return on their investment. And my concern is that if we let these assets depreciate, if we don't do something to straighten this problem out, the community has a lot more to lose than you know what they would pay in this tax levy. The loss or the weakening of marine trades businesses, other businesses that depend on the marine trades trade would be lost or weakened if we have to look at further raising fees for services. I don't want to see us raise rates in our recreational marinas to the point where local people can't afford to have boats there. All those things are possible solutions to the funding problems, but we have struggled, worked really hard to come to some other arrangements, and this is one of the steps that we have available to us. The state legislature gave us this authority. We've used it sparingly in the past, and I think that I can't speak for future commissions, but we're committed to reduce expenses and costs, and committed to optimizing other income sources. So this is just another tool that I think it's prudent for us to at least open the window for.
So I spoke to several people today, and at first I thought I was going to wing it and just try and talk, but I did write something because I think I can get the point across a little clearer, so bear with me while I read this. There's been, in this I think particularly for Jack and Carl, this will kind of speak to your comments about transparency and trust. There's been some question as to the level of community involvement around this issue. For myself, I agree there could have been more, and I apologize if there wasn't. As this was discussed, several overall issues became crystal clear, and there's 4 points here. So number one, we are slowly sinking by our inability to fix our infrastructure. The port has addressed and continues to address revenue and expenses in an effort to balance the budget. Unfortunately, this is not creating a capital fund that even begins to address the needs of carrying this port into the 21st century. Our own capital budget projects expenses of $20 million over the next 20 years. Point two, these resources will allow us to address port properties that have languished for too long and are in dire need of capital improvement funds to keep them open. Current and future jobs that rely on these properties are at risk due to critical infrastructure issues, including Quillisea Marina and adjacent properties, all port breakwaters, inferior docks, mandated stormwater upgrades, the Matsmats boat ramp, and the airport runway. Again, a conservative estimate is $20 million to bring these facilities up to par. Point three, there currently exists with the port staff and the commission, and really it's the people that you're looking at here in this horseshoe, a group of people committed to moving the port forward, moving the port in a way that is productive and transparent for the citizens of Jefferson County. This comes at a potential cost for all of us involved politically, but we are willing to take that risk with the belief that this truly is the only way forward. This Port Commission is committed to setting the port for success and taking off the handcuffs that have been holding it back. And again, not just for the port properties here in Fort Townsend, but for the entire county. Finally, these resources come, these levies that we're talking about, these resources come with limitations both in time and amount. I believe this is truly a safeguard to creating a situation which, in contrast, would continue to weigh on the community without an end in sight. Should we have talked more with the community about this? Yes, we should have. In the end, the best way to safeguard that these resources are spent well is to maintain a citizens advisory board that can come alongside this and future commissions and provide valuable input into the priorities the port places on future spending for economic development and infrastructure. And, you know, I sent this to Jim, what, probably 45 minutes before the meeting, and I can only say I buy this, I'm with this 100%. I do think we need a CAB, a Citizens Advisory Board. It's been too long that we haven't put them. If we are able to put these tools into place, you will find all of us here wanting to see that board in place so that we can use that board to keep us moving in the right direction. So what's that? Helps clarify my position.
I didn't write anything down.
You want to read mine?
No, it just makes me realize that like everyone said, financial constraints are so large that unless we get something like this to happen, the port's going to change drastically. It'll become privatized, rates won't be accountable to anybody except a private pocket, and it's going to be so different that it won't be recognizable. So it really needs to have something like this occur, have port that we all know and love. As we see, just to our neighbors to the west, you know, they're having a hard time with, they have a much larger tax base than we, they have a lot of log yards and stuff, and they still can't afford to keep their
water marine right there, Deepwater Harbor.
And so there's people that are wanting to, you know, it's going to change unless we can do this and keep the local people out.
So I just was wondering to add, what is the process now for this CAB and timeline?
To be determined. We'll let you know.
Well, actually, I can kind of address that a little bit. I think I heard that come up in a group of certain people on Monday night. I was kind of anticipating having the board form earlier than now, but we have a core group of people that have presently formed into a lease advisory board. And that lease advisory board, I anticipated when it got done, because running a board isn't just a hands-off thing, it takes staff time. When that board gets done, then transitioning over to a CAP board. And some of the people that are on that board are excellent folks, and which should be expanded. And I think that, I'm not sure when it's going to be finished. It's going to be finished right away, right?
In April.
In April? That's next month. So I would expect that after that recommendation comes from the lease, which the leasing advisory board, we'll go directly into a CAP board.
Yeah, I think there's some excellent. I'm sorry. I think there's some excellent people on that board, but they're singularly focused. And I think I'd like to see more breadth. But I think that's certainly a kernel of a board that at least has the financials part of the business covered. But we need to have more.
Would it be possible to put out to the community that this is something that we want to do and maybe have a process like soon? So it's not just either a legal or a financial, but it's literally, as you call it, a citizens advisory board. Is that something that, is that a process that's going to happen?
We'll let everyone know that we'll work on that. We make that commitment, and we'll let people know in advance. And when we start looking for more people, everyone will know about it. But I think we've got
in a way where the whole county knows.
Yes, ma'am.
Please.
I think we've got an item on the table. So, any more discussion?
I'm good.
I'm good.
All right. I have a resolution before us. I hear a motion.
I make a motion. Do we accept this resolution?
I second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, staff comments.
Here we go.
Anything.
Jim and I will be in Kent tomorrow before, you're going to love this grab bag of acronyms, I'm going to throw at you, before the Project Review Committee, the PRC, of the CPARB, the Capital Projects Advisory Board of the Department of Enterprise Services. Tomorrow, seeking review of our application and approval for use of an alternative bid procedure for the Point Hudson Jetty project. We're looking for the GCCM, the General Contractor Construction Manager project authorization, and hope to, we will have a decision by the end of their meeting tomorrow. So we have
that's the design build.
Essentially on the design build. So we have an opportunity to make a presentation tomorrow, then Q&A with the Project Review Committee. They will then deliberate and render their decision. So hopefully by mid-afternoon tomorrow, we'll know what path we're proceeding on with respect to the next phase of the jetty.
Thank you.
You stole my thunder.
Sorry. I wanted to use those acronyms.
Oh, good. Yeah, I am. Thank you very much.
That's it?
That's it.
Gee. Commissioner comments?
I have one. So, too bad Janine didn't stick around with Marine Science Center. So, I'm not sure if you're aware the dock was destroyed in a storm last winter that's inside the marina. And I went over and took a look at it. I'm just throwing this out as an idea. It would be great put that back together in a temporary fashion.
Inside which dock, which marina?
The dock that's in the inside the marina, the floating dock that's in the marina at Fort Warden.
The landing, the boat loading dock, or the one that sticks inside that people can tie
the
up?
The one that people can tie up to.
Okay.
It's looks like it's flipped on its side, and the ramp is still in place, but it's just hanging down. So not sure if we can come along. I did mention it to her at one point, and her comment was, by the time Parks gets around and this gets through the Parks machinery, summer will have come and gone, and they're going to lose a season of having that dock in place. So just bringing it up as a point of issue, might be an issue. That might be something we could come alongside and help them.
I have a call into Brian Hagman, and I'll ask him. I have another matter to talk to him about. I'll ask him.
Okay.
Okay.
I have one other comment, and it goes back to the IDD thing.
You start my timer.
Yeah. Exactly. it was a good day today. I enjoyed my conversations with people I talked to today, and I really hope that the particularly the comment about the Citizens Advisory Board is appropriate, because I think that really is the only way forward in terms of us maintaining that trust and transparency, which, you know, everyone is saying, okay, well, that didn't work so far, at least coming up to this date. I think having that board near us, and we all agreed with that, we talked about that, and that's really the only way forward to make sure that these funds are spent well. So that's my other comment.
Okay. Working with the Local Food System Council on the food hub that has kind of stalled, and so I'm not sure where that's going. The food hub was proposed to be sited out on one of the port's airport properties. We had a great maritime heritage meeting at the Northwest Maritime Center to kick off our our new maritime heritage designation for the region. I attended the NLDC broadband meeting down in Blinn, and consequently broadband meeting, the Washington Public Ports broadband meeting. The ports have a broadband authority that in some ways parallels the PUD's authorities, and there's a Jefferson County Broadband Coalition team that's being put together under the auspices of the EDC. And so those meetings will be starting up in April, and I intend to attend those as well.
So is that going to be something where the port and the PUD will be involved in those meetings?
So because all the grants that are available have limits on them, it's very possible that the PUD and the port could essentially double dip together, create an interagency agreement, and get both of us get grants to move some of these things forward. It's really, I think, one of the gating items to bringing technological enterprise to the county is that. Certainly the other big issue is living wage housing, and that is, you know, that's got to be at the top of everybody's list as well. But broadband keeps us from being able to use medical systems that use those kinds of facilities. I know we had a tent here in the port. We should be in the thick of things. We should be able to get broadband, but we had a tenant here in the port that was in jeopardy of losing a government contract because they didn't have the network access. We saw that one kind of by hook and by crook, but you know, something broader would be better. Educators are screaming that. You know, kids can't do research for their homework. It is a real and constant problem in this county. In spite of the fact that the FCC maps show that this entire county is covered by broadband, which to them means 25 megabits down and 3 megabits up. And that must have skipped over my house, but it shows us a solid green. Anyway, I've run through all my time. The next public workshop and regular business meeting of the Port Townsend will be Wednesday, April 10th at 9:30 a.m. for the workshop and 1 p.m. for the Port Commission right here. And there is no executive session tonight, so I adjourn this meeting of the...
Commissioner Tucker, have any comments?
No.
Yeah, I got a couple.
Oh, you got a couple?
Yeah.
Well, let's go for it.
Well, I went to the same meeting with Maritime International Heritage, and that's an exciting new thing coming to town. We're at the very first on the cusp of it. But the thing that I've been doing that's been really exciting for me is the deep dive into tribal relations. I've been, in addition to the tribal governance meeting that we attended on all the various tribes here and how they interact with governments, I've been attending some tribal education at adult education at the tribal putting on at the university, at the UU church, which has been fascinating. And then, like I said, Jim and I met with Ron, and we're getting our next meeting is going to be with some economic development and other folks with the tribes to figure out how we can partner to go forward together, because they're quite interested in working in Port Townsend. So I'm really, really excited about working with tribes. And it's just early days, but I can see a good relationship going on.
Yeah, I went to that meeting as well, and Jim was there. Mm-hmm. It was a really great kickoff to what I hope is a much closer relationship between the tribes and Enterprise and other agencies in Jefferson County. Anyway, all those same things I just said still are true, and I adjourn this meeting of the Board of Public Accounts.